Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is my voice under the blanket. How does it sound now?
All right, Paul here. I wanted to come to you with this talk, this video slash podcast episode. Continuing to think about what is the cultural moment that we're in to try to make sense. And it's hard to do because, of course, we're engrossed in our in time. We're here. We're in our culture. We're in our environment like a fish in water. It can be very hard to take a step back and see what is going on, to see the big picture of something that you're in the middle of. But I think that it can pay a lot of dividends in attempting to gain some clarity. And so I'm going to take a shot at that, and probably it'll come out maybe 50% correct and accurate. And if so, I'll feel like that's a good job. But I wanted to really start this conversation right around 2016, the year 2016, which to me marks a large shift in the spirit of our age, the zeitgeist, if you want to use that word, because quite a bit happened there that I think accelerated a trend that was already in motion. And from there, I think we can trace some of the major movements and streams of thought of what's going on right now. And I think that can really help, again, gain some clarity and some wisdom. And so 2016, why do I pick that? Well, one, we know that there was a presidential election that year in the United States. That was when Trump was elected. And obviously, that was a shock to a lot of people. How many people supported Trump? And there were people who violently supported Trump or fervently supported Trump, and also people who violently reacted the other way, and there was a large backlash. And there still is. That's still going on. But of course, the climax of that was in 2016. And that was one big thing. Another thing that was not as prominent in the headlines was this was the year that Jordan Peterson came into more recognition, national recognition or international recognition. And he's less known, but he's a figure who was a professor and a clinical psychologist, not a politician, not a celebrity, but he became a celebrity of sorts, primarily through confrontation and conflict. So the initiation of this was that he took a stand officially, and I think testified before the legislature in Canada, which is where he's from, that he was not going to comply with this new rule that was coming into law that dictated certain environments where people, maybe employed by the government, had to use the pronoun of choice of each individual. And I don't know the details, but that was the basic idea. And he just took a very firm stand and said, I'm not agreeing to this. He didn't say that he wouldn't choose to use a pronoun. He just said, I'm not complying with the law as a matter of principle, because he said, I don't think that this should be put into law. It's crossing a boundary that should never be crossed. It's a poorly conceived idea, and the execution will likely lead to bad things. And so he was already in some organic conflicts with people on campus where he was a professor, but around the same types of topics, those that have weighed heavily and are factoring heavily in our current social conversations about gender ideology and expression, sexual ideology and expression, and what people's claims about how they view those things, the onus that puts on other people who may or may not agree with that way of thinking, that ideology. And so that's still going on, but that was the year that that happened. And so the pronoun thing was not a major thing on the radar in my mind at that time. It is now, but this was 8 years ago, a significant amount of time, for that conversation to have evolved and penetrated the public consciousness. But this was very early on. So you have the Trump thing, you have this big blow up thing with Peterson that sort of skyrocketed him to greater renown. And you also have, not unconnected with that, you have a right around this time, you could say a different year than 2016, but I think this is right around there, it's as good a year as any, where the rhetoric around gender expression and identity, and the what was now getting called woke thinking and ideology really began to intensify. The tone changed. The goalposts were shifting and moving in a direction right around 2016. And so 2016 marked a year where our culture just sort of accelerated the shift, not just a shift, but also I would say a fracturing and a splintering and people going in opposite directions. And so some of that may be just political and people seeing things differently, but some of it runs pretty deep and along ideological and worldview lines. So 2016 represents a year where that was happening. And what I want to do is try to trace what was going on before that. So if that year was just sort of like this grenade thrown into the mix and exploding, was there anything leading up to that? Was there anything leading up to that explosion? I was at a celebratory gathering not too long ago, and there was a scenario where everybody seemed to be, for the most part, getting along and, you know, celebrating. And all of a sudden, after a while, there was just an explosion, a metaphorical explosion, and everybody had to end up sort of dissipating. And it was weird and scary and volatile and violent and all these things. And I think it took some people by surprise. And the big shift in this explosion of sorts. But I remember thinking, like, I don't think I'm too surprised, because if you're really paying attention, there was things going on, tension building, pressure building, leading up to that, that particularly in retrospect makes sense of what happened. And I think with 2016, it's a similar thing. So I'm going to do my best to paint that picture. Of course, it's going to include some generalizing, and this is all up for debate and discussion, of course. But what has been happening for some time leading up to that is that in our culture, there's been a couple of main streams of thinking and seeing the world around us. So in any culture, you have to have some kind of mostly shared way of viewing things so that you can get along. So the laws make sense, so the interactions make sense. And you can't have every individual moving in a completely different direction. That doesn't work. You can't have a cohesive society that way. So in ours, what's been going on for the last couple hundred years is that we've had a predominant way of viewing things. And the predominant way of viewing things I would describe as modern, rationalistic, scientific, and a product of what we call the Enlightenment. So certain liberal values, the idea of separation of church and state. We have a lot of ideas around compassion and mercy and justice that are very heavily influenced by Christianity, Judeo-Christianity, but we also have some sort of distance from traditional Christianity. And so that goes for the secular people, the people who don't necessarily have a belief system or don't believe in God. They share those post-Enlightenment values and that modern rationalist way of thinking. And I think, as I've mentioned in other talks, a large stream of the Christian tradition, people who do believe, also share that modern rational outlook. It's just that we take a belief in God and sort of, stack that on top of that modern rationalistic way of viewing things. And so, for the most part, we're just modern people. We like to think we're scientific and that we've advanced, and we have some distance between more primitive ages and more primitive cultures, whether it be behind us in time or just elsewhere in the world. But we believe there's a God and we need to do some things to be right with God. And that's sort of the main takeaway or add-on of Christianity. Now, there's a lot of variation within. I'm super generalizing, but I think within large parts of Christianity, particularly Protestant Christianity, maybe has done this the most, mainstream Protestant denominations, separated from what has gone before in Christianity, the traditions and ages past, and charted a new course. And that's a generalization. So you're tracking, there's two major groups that are tracking, but they share more than they disagree on. And what they share is that modern rationalistic worldview. So the thing with that worldview is that it is high on light, but low on heat. It's a low temperature way of looking at life. And it, in my opinion, is no coincidence that this is the time frame where woke ideology really grabbed a foothold. Now, when I say woke ideology, that could mean a lot of things to a lot of people. What I'm using, how I'm using it, is to talk about a way of seeing reality and life and history as very predominantly the story of oppressor groups and oppressed groups, and the groups fall along group identities, demographics, race, sexual orientation, gender, those lines. That is the primary driver of history, and that is the primary driver of any morality, and that which needs to bind people together in a healthy society. So, as with almost any ideology, there are some very good things, kernels of truth, within what motivates that ideology, which is seeing people suffer through oppression. That happens. That has happened, does happen. And historically, it's just a fact and has to be acknowledged. That, however, doesn't mean that that narrative and that lens is the only narrative or lens to which it's helpful to look at history and reality. It doesn't mean that unlimited focus on that lens is going to lead to healthy individuals or a healthy society. It doesn't mean that making a quasi-religion out of that narrative and then querying people and using social pressures to force orthodoxy versus heresy is going to work. And I do believe that the way that this ideology is working and becoming right now is something close to a new potential civil religion, where people adhere with a religious fervor, and that it becomes the single metric and arbiter of how moral you are. And if you're outside of that, then you are something of a heretic. And heresy is a dangerous enough thing that it is right to bring social and or legal pressure to bear to force someone into orthodoxy. So I think it's becoming that, but I want to acknowledge that there's something in there, more than one thing, but there's some things in there that are good and to be acknowledged. And so to perceive that people have been oppressed and or are under oppression is a very good thing. In fact, in the last video and talk that I did, we specifically talked about there does seem to be a tremendous amount of oppression and undermining of people. That is a point of commonality, and I would say that's a point of positivity. Now, to pit people against each other within identity groups and to focus exclusively or almost exclusively on that and to drive pressure through those means, that is a point of departure. That is a point where I think the wisdom has left the room, so to speak. But there's seeds there that make sense. And what that modern, rational, cool temperature religion really has been lacking for a long time is some heat. And wokeness came in with some heat and said, this is good, this is evil. Oppression is happening, and it is the part of every person who wants to be on the side of good to fight that oppression on the behalf of sticking up for people who are being oppressed so that they can flourish. That is a noble thing. That is a noble goal and calling. And so that heat was filling and is filling a vacuum left by the relatively high light but low heat quasi-religion of the modern rational, I would say sort of deistic dominant strain of Christianity in our general Western culture. Wokeism stepped in and filled that void. And people, it's arguable that people in a coherent society aren't going to have all of their needs met by a simply rational, intellectual belief system, whether there's a God in it or not. That may just not be enough. And once again, woke ideology and thinking, I think, has stepped into that gap, and it's appealing. There's a strong, strong appeal there. So I hope I've painted a picture of both the positive and negative aspects of that as I can see it. So of course, within the non-believing community, that's appealing. And then I think there's also been a stream within the believing community where that modern, rational, deistic belief system has continued to exist, but then tack on the woke aspects to it. So it's sort of like a rational deistic belief plus woke. And there's that strain which is going on as well. So that's the heat part. I think along with that, you have another element, which is the traditionally we people have seen the cosmos as a place that is mysterious and densely populated with non-human beings. And I don't just mean animals. I mean what you might call spiritual beings, non-human beings. Now that has gone by the wayside as well with the more modern rational approach and belief system, whether atheistic or Christian. And that is also making a comeback. And so in the non-believing side, you have neo-paganism with all sorts of manifestations. Maybe people want to commune with the dead or the spirits. People are getting big time into psychedelics, which is a way of sort of accessing the spiritual realm through shortcuts and getting the goods that come out of that. And if there's beings to interact with, all the better, right? We don't even care really what and who they are. As long as it's not part of Christianity, it's more believable, all the more so for not being a part of it. You have all sorts of manifestations that you have Wiccan and naturalistic religions making a comeback of sorts. So within the non-believing, non-Christian side, you have that. And then you have, within the Christian side, you have a what's being called a re-enchantment project. So Christians are, I think, rightfully discovering, wait a second, when I read my Bible, there is this very strong spiritual, supernatural element and beings, and the cosmos does seem to be this densely populated place with spiritual warfare going on, different kind of spirit beings that maybe I can't access directly, but I they're there, and they have a real effect on what's going on in the world, not just to us individually, but on larger scales as well. And that's going on. I mean, you have people really from all streams of Christianity participating in that. You have people from, I think Orthodox has probably maintained a better connection to those ways of thinking than most denominations have. Probably Catholic has well. I don't know as much about that. But you have Protestants coming along for the ride, evangelicals. You've got people in mainstream Protestant denominations doing that, Reformed. And so there's really a pretty ecumenical grassroots, I think, movement towards this re-enchantment project of seeing the cosmos once more as not this cold, rational, scientific-only place, but as a place that's much more mysterious, much more interesting, much more peopled with spirit beings, good and bad, both. And that's what's happening. So if you wanted to, you could put this in a grid and have kind of what's come before, which is the modern, rational, non-believing and believing. You've got the same thing with the addition of woke thinking. You've got a non-believing and a believing strain. And now you've got this other element where it's being repeopled, this re-enchantment thing. You've got a non-believing strain and a believing strain. So that, I think, is one way that you could look at sort of some of the major things that are going on in the various ways of thinking that people have. And all sorts of fracture lines are realigning right now. For one thing, you've got people that are in that sort of traditional post-enlightenment, modern rational atheist camp who are now really wanting to align more strongly with Christians. You know, 20 years ago, it was sort of the age of the new atheists. Make fun of Christians. They're so stupid and primitive. How could you believe in a God that's like believing in the flying spaghetti monster? I mean, you have really, really condescending and insulting rhetoric being used. And now you have, I think, many more people saying, hey, I don't even believe in God, but I want our culture to go back to being more like what Christianity helped produce to us culturally. So this would be like the cultural Christianity. And you have people calling themselves Christian atheists. You know, of course, you have plenty of Jewish atheists as well. And that could mean, you know, secularly Jewish, but atheist. But people seeing like, oh, for hundreds of years, we have feasted and nourished ourselves from the fruits that came from Christianity. And now you have something that could take us very different places with this essentially new quasi-religion of wokeism. And it has it might leave all that just in the past. This is this kind of a similar fear that people have or would have when a similarly strong ideology like communism came on the scene in different places where there's, again, a good seed. People in charge can manipulate and oppress people beneath them for their own benefit and simple aggrandizement of what they have and their wealth. That's true. So we need to flatten everything, make sure everybody has the same amount, and we'll have a central leadership group just fairly and evenly decide what everybody does and what everybody gets. Okay in theory, but just doesn't really work very well with human nature, apparently, because it tends to devolve into a horror show. And so I lost my train of thought there for a second, but this emergence of this quasi-religion of wokeism that has a lot of power and a lot of traction, there are now atheists saying, you know, we actually want to be more aligned with the Christians because this looks like so bad that it's showing us actually what some of the good things about at least the cultural and traditional aspects of Christianity have given us. So even if we don't believe in the God stuff, we realize this has brought us to so many good things. And so you have that happening. You have other shifts happening as well and realignments. People going this camp, people going to that camp from where they've been. And it's because these new strains are emerging and the ground is sort of shifting under our feet. But it does seem that this, what's held sway for the last 200-300 years of this more cool temperature, modern, rational, either belief in God or not belief in God, but we kind of share this basic worldview, that appears to be on shaky ground, maybe more than ever. And I think 2016 was the year where, you know, it was sort of like the carcass had been feasted on for as long as it reasonably could. And it was time to start moving on and figuring out what is next and what is next going to look like. Because you can only maybe feast on those fruits and enjoy the benefits for so long while you're cutting the root. Eventually, it's like, you know, a foundation being removed from a house. Eventually, it is going to crumble, and it's just a matter of when and how long it's going to take. It's not instant, but what's going to be taking its place? What's going to be the new thing? And so I wanted to take a little time to try to think through this as best I could. This is just me processing, of course, in real time. But it relates to what I was talking about in the video and talk from a day or two ago with what's happening right now. Where are things going? When we look at the big picture, try to take a step back and read the times. What does it look like is happening and why? What is the explanation? And so I think to understand these cultural events and streams helps. And what I want to do in future talks is to try to paint the picture of how did we get here? If we were so confident, generalizing, in this modern rational worldview, and it held sway for so long, but now we're thinking, wait a second, maybe we missed something. How did we get here? How did we get so confident in the first place? And why are we reinvestigating that now? And I want to give you some reasons why it does make sense to reinvestigate, why it might make sense to think, wait, we've collectively sort of dismissed these views and these thought processes as primitive for a very long time in the favor of what we thought was superior and rational and truly understanding and just being miles ahead intelligence-wise with a scientific rational worldview. But do we? Do we really understand? And are there some valuable ways of thinking and viewing from the past that we simply haven't even understood? How could we even judge them and critique them when we don't even understand them, much less our own current way of thinking? So give you a taste of maybe some future talks, and I want to thank you for your attention, and I'll see you next time.